Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone, from Laughlin, Nevada. This is Jerry Pippin, and we have Linda Moten Howe with us, one of the premier UFO researchers, and she'll be along in just a minute. First of all, we want to let you know that we have Larry Dickman, our UFO show producer, on the line. And Larry, you're going to be going over to a conference of your own pretty soon. Bud Hopkins is having something on October 11th.
Right, out in Staten Island. I'm going to make a little short trip and spend the afternoon with Bud and his wife and a couple of hundred people, and we're going to get a big treat and have a book signing at the end for his new book.
Now, Linda is going to talk to us about her expertise with cattle mutilations, and she's got some pretty interesting things to tell. But I thought we had a few minutes here. I wanted to go over for our listeners who are not familiar with our UFO files we do each week. We actually do sighting reports from around the world and around the United States using Filer reports, mainly George Filer, but others as well. And I thought, you know, tonight we might get into some of the international sightings, because we normally deal with the United States sightings on our UFO files report.
All right, we have a few sightings from other parts of the world tonight that we can cover quickly here.
Well, let's start out in Tijuana. I mean, the landscape's not too different from Laughlin.
Okay, yeah, well, actually, we have, this week, there are two reports from Tijuana. They occurred about a week apart. Both of them are daytime sightings. And so the first one, let's get into that, occurred on September 10th at 3:30 p.m. Three silver-plated spheres were spotted at a distance of 1 kilometer on a sunny day by a family. Looking east, the family saw three objects approaching that appeared to be silver-plated and spherical in shape. They observed the spheres for about 5 minutes, and they were flying at only about 200 meters in height. The witness thought...
That's pretty low.
Right. The witness thought that the objects were about 3 meters in diameter. Now, that's not really that big. You know, it's about 9 feet across, as they flew off towards the south at medium speed. So you got 3 9-foot across or 10-foot across approximately spheres. Now, these are rather small objects, you know, in terms of UFOs, but they could be what we term observational craft. They may not have even been manned.
If they were manned, it'd be only one.
One, and he'd be a little cramped.
Yes, he would be. What about that other side?
Well, this took place a week later on September the 17th at 5:10 p.m. The witness states, "I was cleaning my dog," presumably giving him a bath.
She ran him through the car wash.
When I looked to the west and I saw a flying object 250 meters above a hill that is about half a mile away, it was gray and sometimes it flashed brightly as it moved irregularly. It hovered for several minutes and instantly disappeared, leaving a momentous trail pointing to the south. So this is, if there was a trail left behind, and that says that it didn't disappear like it dematerialized or cloaked itself, is that it zipped off.
A vapor trail? A comm trail or what?
Well, it certainly could have been a vapor trail in the sense that the thing was moving so fast, if the air had enough humidity in it, it caused condensation behind it.
You know, we are broadcasting around the world on shortwave radio on the IBC radio network. England, they listen to us. I wonder if we have any sightings over there we could talk about.
Yes, there are a couple. One comes from an air show that was held in England. It's called the Goodwood Festival. And we have a lot of videos seem to be shot at air shows that show the planes flying around, and then you'll see what appears to be discs or triangles or whatever in the background, sometimes even maneuvering within the flight formations of several planes. So, you know, sometimes I wonder why every air show seems to have a UFO video associated with it, but here is a report of one.
And you wonder why the pilots of the craft during the air show aerobatics don't notice, but they're probably pretty busy doing what they do.
Right. Well, maybe they like to come and watch our air shows, just like people do.
I don't know. What does this one say?
Well, it says the witness writes that on September the 5th, at the Revival Air Show, two aircraft were flying in formation above the crowd when a disc entered the formation at 1:35 p.m. Aviation expert Don Berliner informs me that he identified the aircraft as a U.S. Navy F-4U Corsair and a P-40 Tomahawk fighter in Chinese Flying Tiger markings. The disc is about one-third the size of the P-40, which really isn't that big.
Oh, another small disc,
right,
like in Mexico.
This, the P-40 has a wingspan of 37.3 feet, or about... It says about 37.3 feet or about 12 or 13 feet. I mean, that doesn't make sense. So it's meters to feet conversion here. It's probably 12 to 13 meters. Right, Jerry?
I don't know. I'm not very good at metrics.
Well, basically it's, you know, three times.
Well, then that's probably right.
Actually, it's supposed to be yards, though. So, you know, it's like 1 yard is approximately equal to a meter, 3 feet. The disc may be closer to the camera, and its size may be smaller, even smaller than what he thinks it is. So this would really be a little one, right? Simon, a 29-year-old from Wessex, Sussex, was filming the event with a JVC Hi-PAL camcorder, and his images are excellent. The maneuvering UFO indicates that it operates with its own propulsion system and could have caused a dangerous collision as an unknown metallic brown disc passes from right to left close to the airplanes at moderate speed. Simon made a great zoom to the object, and its shape and size are clearly revealed. The disc impressed Simon and the crowd. So the whole crowd's sitting there watching this at the air show. Everybody saw this, whatever it was.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. We only have about a couple of minutes, a little under that, actually, before we talk to Linda Moulton Howe. And she's going to discuss also the incident of finding a underwater man-made objects near the coast of Cuba, which may be an underground city. It's a very interesting discussion. Didn't something happen in Gloucester, too?
And this is a very short sighting. It's a nighttime sighting. It says four light brownish-red oval objects were seen in the sky flying from the northeast on September the 4th at 10:23 p.m. The object was the same size as Mars in the night sky. Now, in other words, I don't know how you can say they're oval, because Mars, unless you're looking at a telescope or binoculars, wouldn't have any discernible shape. It's just a point source. However, they're basically comparing it to Mars and saying it's a, you know, sort of like Mars in color, but darker in color. The object was a trapezoid, they say, actually. So, a trapezoid certainly isn't the same shape as Mars. With a light at each corner on the trapezoid. The rear two objects accelerated to the front and seemed to touch. The craft made absolutely no noise. So that's a rather strange description. I think there's a lot of data been left out of there, but you get the idea. It was something big and strangely shaped.
Larry Dickin, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. And folks, join us at least once a week here on the IBC Radio Network and also on our website. We always do the UFO files of all the latest sightings reports. And you do a great job at the web as well, Larry.
Thank you very much,
and,
Gary.
And we have Linda Moten Howe next. I know you're a huge fan of hers, as I am as well.
I certainly am. I'm looking forward to hearing her.
Jerry Pippin, and we have Linda Moten Howe, and you are a legend when it comes to research, Linda.
Well, I know that I'm a person who has always been driven by wanting to get to the bottom of things, and I like truth. And since I graduated from Stanford with a master's degree in communication, it seems like this has been the hallmark of my life, whether I was going after a medical story, a science story, or an environmental pollution story. It has always been what is happening on this planet that we ought to know more about. And that's how I got into animal mutilations in the context of being director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver. And that was the fall of 79. I've been working for the CBS station there for quite a while. And I was surrounded by newspaper stories of these unusual animal deaths in many counties in Colorado and surrounding states. And because I had come from a background in school and professionally, which was to explore anything that was happening in the physical world around me that would affect people. And here were all these animals being found, these strange bloodless cuts, with ranchers throwing their arms up, going to sheriffs and saying, do something about this, and law enforcement saying, we can't find tracks, there's no blood, there's no evidence, so what can we do? And that's why, as the director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, I thought, and I look back at how naive it was, but I thought, well, I'll get to the bottom of this
and do a documentary.
And here we are 24 years later. And I've certainly done, I've done television shows, documentaries, four books. I've been doing weekly radio now for, this will be the 11th year, starting February of 2004. And in those over 500 radio programs, in addition to the television and the books and the documentaries, I probably have reported probably more about the unusual animal death story than maybe anybody on the planet.
And do you
still
have
don't have a bottom line answer.
Have you gone through a morphosis of change from what you thought it might be to now, or you pretty much just don't know?
In the fall of 79, when I made my very first phone calls to vets, to sheriffs, to ranchers, I'll tell you very honestly, my reporter's suspicion was that I was dealing with government cover-up. I was right on that score for sure. But in those first weeks, I thought, and I was married at the time, and I told my husband, I think I'm getting into a story like the Dugway Proving Ground story in Utah that had happened years before, when nerve agent gas had been used in a military exercise that went awry, and all of these sheep died. And the government, instead of facing up and owning up to the responsibility that they were responsible, they were not forthcoming. And it's a big story. It's been dramatized on television. So my mind was in that kind of context. The government is doing something in the environment, and these animals are being sampled for some reason. And I just had that kind of vague notion. It wasn't 2 weeks, because I remember I started, the first phone calls were exactly on September 1st of 1979. I've never forgotten that. It was 2 weeks later, by the middle of September, that I had talked with sheriffs, I had talked with deputies, I had talked with fellow reporters, I had talked with so many ranchers, and so many people were telling me the same thing, off the record, Linda, no, I won't go on camera, but, and then what was I hearing? Beams of light that came down out of something they couldn't see, strange spinning lights, helicopters that were emerging over pastures that made no sound. One woman said that she had heard the sound of a helicopter over the deck of her house. She was a rancher, and the house was in the middle of the pastures, and ran out onto her deck thinking that this helicopter was coming down over her house, felt the air of something pass over her, and couldn't see anything on a starry night. After a while of hearing all these stories and realizing that I suddenly, instead of getting the kind of cooperation that I would have expected from law enforcement, if in fact they were as puzzled as I was about maybe the possibility there was environmental contamination, our government was doing something, they were scared of the story. That was what impressed me, that law enforcement really didn't like what they were encountering. They didn't like the lack of evidence. And the turning point for me was in October. The crew and I had gone into production. There were these two guys, wonderful people, and I. We were traveling in this blue station wagon. We were in that car for 23 days, traveling from Colorado up into Wyoming, down through, back through Colorado into New Mexico, making loops to wherever the story was taking me day by day. I was truly putting together a documentary by the seat of my pants. And it was down in Trinidad, Colorado in October, and I was sitting across the desk with the crew. It was about 10 o'clock in the evening, because it was the only time that we could get with Lou Girodo, who was the district attorney's investigator of animal mutilations. The camera is running, and I ask him the same question that I had asked so many other people in law enforcement. Who or what do you think is killing and mutilating these animals, and why? And he paused, and he looked right at the camera, and he said, well, among other investigators and I, we've come to the conclusion that we're dealing with creatures not from this planet. I had heard this off the record, and now I am looking into the eyes, eye to eye, sitting across the desk, from a man who has been telling me about all of the incredible experiences that he, deputies, and other law enforcement down in Trinidad, Colorado, have had out in fields trying to investigate animal mutilations. That included things like being in a car with a deputy, watching what he said was the size of what a full moon looks like to the human eye, but the orange color of a ripe pumpkin. Seeing this light, the deputy seeing the light, seeing it suddenly divide into two, and they are astonished that it's dividing into two, and once it's divided into two, one light goes one way, one light goes the other. Within a few minutes, both lights come back, merge, and he said, honest to God, the light went straight down into the pasture and disappeared. Law enforcement was experiencing phenomena just like the ranchers were seeing, and so when Lou Girodo said other investigators and he had come to the conclusion that they were dealing with creatures not from this planet, and then he proceeded to give the reasons why. Helicopters that made no sound, that evaporated just like mist, or the sound of helicopters and nothing was there. Stories that I'd already been hearing, but now it's on the record with the camera running with Lou Girodo. chief investigator of the district attorney's office in Trinidad, Colorado. And Lou Giroto had been out on enough animal mutilation cases, had seen enough, had tried to track through military offices in the state of Colorado and beyond. Where could this strange, dark, black helicopter traffic be coming from that he and others saw? They would get reports from ranchers about all of these black helicopters that were over the pastures where they would find mutilated animals. Never once were they able to link anybody on any military operation anywhere in the United States to dark helicopters in the area where they were reported. So now we're sitting here in the fall of 2003. It's 24 years later. I can say this, that I have sat and talked with people who have worked in the CIA and other intelligence agencies for this government, and they don't pull any punches when they acknowledge, yes, we are dealing with alien life forms involved in animal mutilations around the world. When it comes to the why, everybody seems to agree, at least on one consensus, that the main reason is a genetic harvesting. But I don't know anyone who has a consensus on why there is a genetic harvest, and I don't know of a consensus among people that I've talked with about how many other agendas could be in play here on a global, worldwide animal mutilation phenomenon that has been going on since, in newspaper files that I have from the year 1961, Huntsville, Alabama is the first case. But Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso told me before he died, and he wrote about this in his book, The Day After Roswell, that after he had come back to the United States doing duty in World War II, he was assigned in the Eisenhower administration and later under the Kennedy administration with General Arthur Trudeau in the Pentagon, who Eisenhower had appointed to be head of research and development for the Army, to work with General Trudeau on back engineering a series of objects that General Trudeau had in file cabinets in his office in the Pentagon that were identified to Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso as being extraterrestrial technologies. And their concern, and he saw the documents with his own eyes, about worldwide unusual deaths of animals in which there was no blood, excision of tissue, and no tracks, linked in the document to extraterrestrial biological entities, which is the phrase he said were in these documents dated in the early 1950s.
Wow. We're talking about Linda Moulton Howe, and we're talking about animal mutilation. She's probably the number one person who has investigated all of this. We'll be right back, and we'll find out about her latest television projects, if she has that going. She has something interesting about Atlantis we want to talk to her briefly about as well. And we have the word crop circles. I'm sure that'll come up, too. This is Jerry Pippin, and this is UFO Files. I won't keep you forever.
Yeah.
10. It's okay. Our guest is Linda Moulton Howe. We're here at Harrah's on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. And you had an interesting conference today, and we'll get to that in a minute, Linda. But we're talking about cattle mutilations and extraterrestrial technology, and you've done a lot of investigating on this. And I asked you kind of naively when we started, have you changed your mind, or have you found something new, or are you pretty much on the same track after you figured out it was extraterrestrial, perhaps?
Well,
there's no perhaps to it, really.
As a reporter, what I've tried to report is what I have learned through military intelligence, law enforcement sources, and this is what they say. Then there are the eyewitnesses who have seen beams of light come down of objects in the sky that are unidentified and have watched animals rise in beams of light and then have seen the animals either lowered in the beam of light or there's no beam on the return. The animal is literally dropped to the ground, so hard that it makes a crater with its own body. There was a rancher in Sand Springs, Oregon, who in the course of one summer in the 1970s said that this happened many times, that he had seen dozens of animals over a period of time that had been dropped and their bodies laid in the craters. When you combine all of this and you say, in 2003, has anything changed? I think what's remarkable for me as a reporter, I started on this story September 1 of 1979. We're talking on the weekend of September 27th, 28th in Laughlin, Nevada, 24 years later. The worldwide animal mutilation phenomena is as current and ongoing today as it was when I started working on this on September 1st of 1979.